While we were still at home, the Hungarians also instituted that they had a youth movement, like you have here the Scouts. They had a youth movement called Levente. That was what it was called in Hungarian. Every young person from the age of 8 to 16 had to be in this youth group. The non-Jews were training for army, all kinds of weapons and this and that. The Jews, they wouldn't allow to do that. The Jews, they forced to do work in the town. Like if it was winter time, we had to go and shovel snow in the municipality building or in yards of churches. All kinds of things they found for us to do. And the leaders of these youth groups were Hungarians, and they were anti-Semites, and they were beating us up if we didn't do it as fast or whatever. So already as a child, I suffered already even at home. I mean, not only that my brothers were away and all that, and in addition to that, there was rationing for food because of the war. There were coupons that the municipality issued for every person, and you were allowed a little bit of sugar, a little bit of flour, you know, things like that. And once a month, they brought all these things to the town with wagons and to the grocery stores, and you had to stand in line. And with the coupons, you got this. There was some black market, people were buying on the black market, whatever, but still, food was scarce. And I used to be very good in getting in line in order to get for us, for our family. I used to get up early in the morning and stand in line before the things arrived, so I'll be among the first ones. That's how it was. Another thing, my father, may he rest in peace, he was a big smoker. He smoked cigarettes. He never used a match. He used to light one from the other. That's a chain smoker. And cigarettes were also rationed. But from time to time, here and there were some stores that allowed a little bit of cigarettes. So I always used to find out and run and bring him cigarettes because, you know, I saw how he suffered. And then when we were in the ghetto and we couldn't get cigarettes, I saw how he suffered. And I made up my mind at that time that if I ever get out of this, I'll never touch it. And in Buchenwald, when we were liberated by the American army, they were giving out cartons of cigarettes. I took it, but I didn't use it. I sold it, and I got bread or whatever. But that's how it was. Anyway, coming back to Bilke. The president of the Jewish community was ordered, right in the beginning, when the Hungarians occupied the town, to give them a list of all the Jews living in Bilke. Sometimes there was a president who had the courage to refuse, and they were shot for not giving the list, so they had no choice. And from this list, they used it for all the different persecutions. They knew who lives where and who is what and so on. Another thing, there were a few countries in Europe, very few, I think only three, that saw to it that the Jews are safe. One of them was Denmark, one of them was Bulgaria, and one of them was Albania. As a matter of fact, today in the New York Times there is an article about it. But the Germans or the Hungarians could not do that, to deport the Jews just like that. They had to have the approval of the municipalities. So in Bilke, the town, what they call it, the people that were elected to be in town hall, the council, they met and they decided that the Jews will be deported. So it was announced that this was Passover. And during the holiday of Passover, the last day of Passover, we were told by the Hungarian police that the next morning we have to be in the yard of the main synagogue because we are going to be taken to a ghetto. That evening, everybody was packing feverishly. We were allowed to take only 25 pounds of whatever you wanted, but not more than 25 pounds to a person. So people were packing pictures, religious items. Some were packing preserves, if they had any. We cooked hard-boiled eggs even for a few days to have something. And since it was Passover, we still had matzah left over, so we broke them into pieces and put it in a bag and took it with us. The next morning, the Hungarian police showed up and they told us to leave the house, everything we had to leave in the house the way it was. And they sealed the house. And we went to the yard of the synagogue, and there, those Jews that were still there, because the men were not there anymore, that, you know, and also the 100 families that were taken away before, and some other things that happened, so the number of us dwindled down. And the Hungarian police were standing there with their guns, with their bayonets, watching us. And the officer in charge had a list, this list from the president of the Jewish community, and they called out family after family, and we had to line up, and we marched to the train station. Now, before we go on, I wanted to show you, I don't know if you saw, Sunday morning, there was an interesting article in the New York Times. You know, the Germans and the Hungarians too, they confiscated all the properties of the Jews. Not only properties, anything in the houses. So, here, this is in Paris. A Jewish woman is sorting out electric bulbs. They took out the bulbs from the Jewish apartments, and she was checking them whether they are good or not. If they were no good, they threw them away. The good ones, they shipped to Germany. Pots and pans, all of this was collected. Furniture, clothing, I mean, every item that was in there. Now, it is estimated that the Germans and their collaborators have robbed in Europe $350 billion worth of items.
Not to mention the priceless art?
Yeah, of course. Well, that's sure. I mean, it's... So anyway, so we are marching now to the train station. It took a long time, even though it wasn't that far, but it took a long time. It was much further than from here to the New Rochelle train station, much further. But still, it took us hours because the men weren't there. They were elderly and children and women. But we were trying to help each other to carry these bundles that we were allowed to. On both sides of the main road where we were walking, the Ruthenians were standing there and having a good time. You know, they were waiting for that Moses and so on. We arrived at the train station, and there were the boxcars waiting for us. You know what a boxcar is. They pushed in 100 people in each boxcar with the bundles. And after a while, they closed the doors and the train moved. It took us over a day, and we arrived in the ghetto. It was called Berehovo. And in that ghetto, the Hungarians concentrated 15,000 Jews from the surrounding towns. This place where we ended up used to be a brick factory. They were large structures, but it didn't have walls, it didn't have doors, it didn't have windows. It was just supported by a few poles, you know, to support the roof. And in that, they placed us. The management of the ghetto allocated a certain number of space to each family according to how many people there were. And here everybody is together. But in order to have some privacy, we took ropes and we hung up a few blankets in order to divide between family and family, like cubics, you know, something like that. To sleep, we had to put the bedding on the floor, and that's where we slept. The ghetto provided once a day some soup. And even that, there were some very religious Jews that they wouldn't eat it because they weren't sure that it's kosher. I mean, there was no meat in it, but still. The women were trying very hard to make some kind of food. So we made makeshift fireplaces outside in the field. We put together a few stones, and we found a thin, like a cover, and we put it on it, and that's where they cooked something. My mother was very good at it. From the matzah pieces, she made all kinds of things. And also there was a black market, because the younger people under 18, like from 15 to 18, were taken into Berehovo, into the city, to do work for the Hungarians. And also the people over 50, too. So they used to smuggle in some food. And there became, there was a certain black market. So we still had, for a while, we had some money or jewelry or whatever, so we used to buy on the black market things, and my mother used to make food. One day, the Hungarians got smart, and they announced that everybody has to give them their valuables. They put out in front of these structures, they put out big baskets, and you had to throw in there, the women, their wedding rings, their earrings, watches, currency, whatever valuables you had to throw it in there. If not, they said, you'll be shot. So people were scared. So this eliminated the black market, because you couldn't buy with nothing. After that, we were told, in the meantime, the Russians were coming closer. And there were rumors that the Russians are, 200 miles away, whatever, wherever they are. They announced that they're going to take us to a different place, to a secure place, because the Russian front is coming closer. And they put us again into those boxcars. On each boxcar, they put a container with water and a container for human needs. And they closed the doors, they pushed in again 100 people in each. And my family, my father, my mother, five sisters and their children, and one of my brothers, Joseph, who was 2.5 years older than I, also was with us, and all of us were on this train. And the train moved. I remember that while we were on the train, my father said to the people there from our hometown, as soon as President Roosevelt will find out what's going on, he is going to stop that. I mean, that's how people believed in America, you know. The train was going and stopping on and off, on and off. Finally, the train stopped at the train station called Košice, which was on the Slovak border. There, a SS high-ranking officer appeared with a Hungarian officer, and they had a one of those loudspeakers, like, and they announced that from this moment on, you are under the German army command. And the doors slammed, and the train continued.